Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info.
From pop culture to politics, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And what a great day when the headline over at CNBC is Dow jumps 200 points to record as traders cheer stimulus bill signing. I think everybody is cheering the stimulus bill signing. What a terrible way to go into the new year if we had a government shutdown. I do think we ought to avoid government shutdowns. That doesn't mean avoiding government cuts. Government cuts are very important and should be made and need to be made. I wouldn't be expecting too much in that direction from the Biden administration. We will also go to some little bits of information that have now been gathered and announced to the public about the suicidal bomber who, thank God, took only his own life, 63-year-old Anthony Quinn Warner. Two things about him that have now come out that may begin helping to assemble a puzzle, but also not really a puzzle with Kamala Harris. She is trying to remain at least somewhat visible in the midst of a period of time in which being vice president-elect just doesn't give you a lot of sway at being president-elect. President Trump loves to upstage Joe Biden. Well, he did that. And he did that again. He may even do it again after Joe Biden is president. But President Trump, of course, getting lots of attention for indicating that he might not sign, he might in fact veto the coronavirus relief bill and the omnibus spending bill. He has vetoed the defense spending bill. That's $740 billion. The Congress is going to try to override his veto. And, of course, it's very important that they do. Because the veto is based upon a completely unrelated issue, which is his desire to remove Clause 230 from the Federal Communications Act. What does it have to do with defense? Nothing. Nothing. And then his second issue is that the defense authorization bill, it's not appropriation, it's authorization. The defense authorization bill includes language authorizing the Defense Department to do what it wants to do, which is to change the names of bases that were named after Confederate generals. Is this a reason to block all of the increases in pay, all of the funding for weapons programs, funding for our national defense? It seems to me that it is not. And I certainly hope that Democrats will join Republicans in overriding the president's veto on that issue. Kamala Harris, however, is speaking about a less important issue. She's speaking about Kwanzaa. And Kwanzaa, which began on Saturday night, that's right, the 26th. And it is celebrated by at least 500,000 Americans, up to 2 million Americans. And she sent out Kwanzaa greetings, which is perfectly nice. But she sent out her Kwanzaa greetings, and this would be clip 8, sounding like this.
Happy holidays, everyone. I wanted to take a moment to send my warmest wishes to everyone celebrating Kwanzaa. Like so many other holidays, we will be celebrating Kwanzaa a little differently this season in our home. We'll be doing it over Zoom. You know, my sister and I, we grew up celebrating Kwanzaa. Every year, our family would, and our extended family, we would gather around across multiple generations, and we'd tell stories. The kids would sit on the carpet, and the elders would sit in chairs, and we would light the candles, and of course, afterwards, have a beautiful meal. And, of course, there was always the discussion of the seven principles. And my favorite, I have to tell you, was always the one about self-determination, Kuji Chagaliya. And, you know, essentially it's about, you know, it's about be and do. Be the person you want to be and do the things you want to do and do the things that need to be done. It's about not letting anyone write our future for us, but instead going out and writing it for ourselves. And that principle motivates me today as we seek to confront the challenges facing our country and to build a brighter future for all Americans. So to everyone who is celebrating, happy Kwanzaa from our family to yours.
Okay. And people might say, well, this is more pandering, but it's actually, because I did have recollections of this, I wondered, what did Barack Obama say about Kwanzaa when he was president? What did George W. Bush say, if anything, about Kwanzaa? So, first of all, Kwanzaa is not an age-old holiday. It was a holiday that was established in the 1970s. And the seven principles are not sacred, ancient principles of African wisdom. They are an attempt to try to take elements of African culture, the best elements of African culture, and to put them into seven principles. But the principles, which were put together by a militant black academic named Ron Karenga back in the 1970s, who was African American, but basically even pretty sure the name that he took was not the name that he originally was given. What's fascinating to me is in all the biographical material about Kamala Harris, and I've read a lot about it, she always says that she was raised basically going to church. And she would attend black churches, even though the fact is her parents broke up when she was seven. So it seems to me that this idea that she and her sister, with her Indian, Tamil Indian mother, would sit around and light the kinara, which is what they call their version of the menorah, which is a part of the Hanukkah tradition. Okay, I'm glad she has fond memories of Kwanzaa, and I hope everybody who wants to affirm Kwanzaa does and takes its affirmative messages to heart. This is what President Obama said in his last Kwanzaa message, and yes, it is a statement by the president from the White House. In this holiday season, Michelle and I send our best wishes to those celebrating Kwanzaa. For families across the country, today marks the beginning of a joyous time to reflect on the rich African-American culture and to remember the principles of unity, determination, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith, principles that reflect our most cherished values as Americans. As we reflect upon this year, we look forward to the blessings and aspirations that await us in the year to come, and we wish those families that will gather together and light the kinara blessings for a happy and healthy new year. And the first Kwanzaa statement by President George W. Bush came in December of 2001, shortly after the attacks of 9/11. And President Bush said this, "I am pleased to send warm greetings to all who are celebrating Kwanzaa. Established in 1966, Kwanzaa represents an African-American and Pan-African holiday celebrating family, community, and culture. The seven-day observance beginning December 26th and ending January 1st serves as a special time to recognize and reaffirm the Nguzo Saba, or seven principles of African culture. These are unity, self-determination, collective work, and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. Kwanzaa provides an opportunity, says President Bush, for people of African heritage, regardless of their religious background or faith, to come together and to show reverence for their creator and creation." Well, okay, fine. So what about talking about African-American history? Has it been an entire nightmare from the beginning? Was America really based on the enslavement of Africans? We'll talk to historian Peter Wood of the 1620.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and when I invented my pillow, I wanted to have everything you'd ever want in a pillow. You can adjust the patented fill to your exact individual needs. You can wash and dry my pillow. It has a 10-year warranty not to go flat, and it's made in the USA. And now, for a limited time, you can get a queen-size premium my pillow for the lowest price ever. Regularly $69.98, now only $29.98. That's a $40 savings. I'm also giving you deep discounts on all my MyPillow products, including my bed sheets, mattress toppers, and bath towels. Not only are you getting the lowest prices ever, but they make the best Christmas gifts ever. Buy now and I'll extend my 60-day money-back guarantee to March 1st, 2021.
Call 800-320-6280. Use the promo code MEDVED. Call 800-320-6280. Promo code MEDVED. On the MedVed Show, we like to call attention to numbers, statistics that are optimistic about our country. Well, here's one that's not so optimistic, but it's very, very real. There are now 100 million Americans who suffer from ongoing pain due to aging, exercise, overexertion. Now, Relief Factor can help, particularly with the exercise-related pain or the general muscle aches and pains that many of us experience. I use Relief Factor myself, and I'm proud to do so because this is a great natural product with no medicines or drugs, no addictive qualities at all. Click on the banner at our website at michaelmedved.com for Relief Factor. Order that quick start. Get thanks by listeners for this all the time. I hope you become one of those thankful listeners too. Call 833-654-PAIN. It's toll free, 833-654-PAIN, or go to the website michaelmedved.com and click on the big banner for Relief Factor.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, simulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Show. It is a pleasure to welcome Peter Wood. And Peter, we're going to go directly to you and then later share the inspiring Kwanzaa message from President Trump. No, really, he's done one every year he's been president. We will get to that. Peter is the president of the National Association of Scholars. He, for many years, was a professor at Duke University. His wife, Elizabeth Fenn, has been a guest on this show before for her outstanding book, Pox Americana, which is about the impact of smallpox, particularly during the American Revolution, where that disease played a very real role. Peter's new book is essential. I mean, it's desperately needed by everyone in the country, and everyone in the country should try to get hold of it. It is called 1620, and it is addressed very squarely at some of the lies and distortions and misleading aspects of the notorious, the infamous New York Times 1620 Project. Professor Wood, congratulations on the book, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm going to have to unfortunately begin with a correction. There's more than one Peter Wood in the world, and the professor of history at Duke University who shares my name is not me. I am someone who was a professor of anthropology at Boston University for many years, and unfortunately I don't have a wife of the name of the scholar you mentioned as well. My wife is Jody Wood.
No, thank you for correcting me. It's because it would be peculiar, because the other Peter Wood also seems to be one of those relatively rare academics who seems to have his head on straight. Do you know each other?
I sometimes get his mail, and I'm sure he sometimes gets mine. I always forward it back to him, but he and I have never met face-to-face. I believe he is now retired from Duke, as I'm from Boston University, so maybe someday fate will bring us into the same room. But we do cover some of the same materials. I've done work on diversity and race relations, and his work is mainly about history, African-American history, so... But there's that.
Okay, so let us get to the very essence of your new book, 1620. The 1619 Project is based on the notion that a group of some 20 kidnapped Africans who were taken by pirates, basically, and deposited in Jamestown in 1619, that this is the real beginning of American history. What is most wrong about that assumption, which is being powerfully promulgated by the Pulitzer Prize-winning 1619 Project of the New York Times, and now being inserted into school curricula and being sent out all across the country as the truth about the United States?
Well, I can answer it on detail and on principle. On detail, the poor unfortunate captives who were brought to Jamestown in 1619 were not, once they set foot on shore, slaves anymore. They were turned into indentured servants. And after serving the same terms of indenture as English indentured servants, they were set free. Many of them became landowners. They intermarried with the white population. They gained full legal rights, as we know, because some of them filed lawsuits against neighbors and prevailed in Virginia court. So the story itself is false. Pirates did bring African captives to the shores of Jamestown, not because Jamestown wanted them, but because the pirates had run out of food and were looking for sustenance. But the fate of those captives was a good deal better than it had been. They continued on their way to the silver mines in Mexico, where the Spanish were taking them before the pirates captured them. But that's somewhat incidental. It's a falsehood, and it's important to know that the 1619 Project is full of historical falsehoods. But the bigger picture is this claim that America was founded in white supremacy and slaveocracy. The earliest we have of records pertaining to black Africans meeting white Europeans in the English colonies is one in which the exchange was relatively benign and had good results. Would it be that that historical moment of integration had continued, but slavery lay in the future some 50 years off? And when it happened, it was a kind of catastrophe for all of America, and that it took an immense civil war and 600,000 dead soldiers to eventually rid ourselves of this pernicious institution. But the lens by which Nicole Hannah-Jones and her colleagues in writing the 1619 Project produce is that this element of slavery became the defining element of what it meant to be America, that it traduced our principles of equality and freedom. Those were simply an illusion perpetrated to keep slaves in their place, that American prosperity, our social economic development over the centuries, all resulted from the theft of the labor of Africans and the descendants of those Africans. So it's a tall tale, one that reduces all of history to a single dimension. I don't think there's anybody who wants to deny the existence of that dimension, but to make it into the lens by which we see all of our past is itself a gigantic falsehood.
What about the claim? I had Professor Michael Eric Dyson on the show last week. And Professor Dyson was defending a citation in his most recent book from Fannie Lou Hamer, claiming that, well, even though blacks were never the majority in the young United States, they did the majority of the work simply because they had to work so much harder. And briefly, what's your response to that?
Well, I think that takes an imponderable and stretches it into a very large claim indeed. The people who emigrated from the Old World, primarily from the British Isles in the early years of our founding, were themselves reduced to extremely hard labor. We know that the mortality rate in Virginia and the other colonies was extremely high. That wasn't simply because of disease. It was because people were living close to the measure of what was a sustainable diet, and the hard work that Americans put into it was a factor.
Without any question, we will be right back with the Peter Wood of Boston University. He is the president of the National Association of Scholars and a former professor of anthropology and a college provost. He's also the author, most importantly, of 1620, a must-read for people who want to get an accurate perspective about our nation's origins and history. More with Peter Wood coming up.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
This is George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM and History Channel's Ancient Aliens. We support the amazing energy, nutrition, and skincare products from Jeunesse. Jeunesse products are designed by leading doctors in their field with natural ingredients and even stem cell technology. These products help your body perform and look better. Shop Jeunesse at GCNLife.com or call 1-844-443-6637. GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump's former chief of staff is explaining why the president held up the coronavirus relief bill before ultimately signing it.
What he was trying to do is simply send a message that he wasn't really happy with the bill.
The former White House chief of staff speaking there on CNBC as far as another message that he believes the president was trying to send.
Congress is broken, and it is. I think a lot of us were relieved he did sign the bill because I don't think it was a plan if he didn't, but I don't think he's happy about it.
A very busy Monday after Christmas for the House of Representatives. The House will be voting on a veto override after the president rejected a defense spending bill. If the House and Senate vote to override the veto, it will be the first of Trump's presidency. The TSA is saying more than 7 million passengers made their way through safety checkpoints at airports last week. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus doesn't grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A, .com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.
Attention business owners body slammed by overwhelming debt. If your business is in trouble, hassled by creditors, if you're frustrated, finally fed up with big business bailouts while your business has been left for dead, please listen close. There's a brand new fast-track bankruptcy. Some have even called it the biggest small business bailout in American history. Designed for individuals and their businesses. And look, almost no one knows about this yet. My attorney wasn't even aware of it. The truth is, beating the system has never been easy because it's rigged in a sense against the little guy. But here's the jaw-dropping news nobody's talking about. They've literally just changed the system so that you can beat it. But only if you understand how the new game has to be played. Find out if you qualify at pocketsoflight.com. This government-backed small business repair program is still legal, but may not be renewed after the election. Fight back fairly, fight back ethically at pocketsoflight.com.
Before this one, and I'm not now talking about next year, I'm talking about last year, 2019 saw the very big, much heralded launch of the Pulitzer Prize winning 2019 project. By the New York Times. It was a desire to say that no, America didn't begin in 1620 when the Pilgrims landed. It didn't begin in 1776 when we declared our independence. America as we know it really began, and they also imply that the institution of slavery really began in 1619 with the landing of about 20, we're not even sure exactly how many, kidnapped Africans in Jamestown, Virginia. One of the great services of Professor Peter Wood, who is the president of the National Association of Scholars, he is the author of the just published 1620, A Critical Response to the 1619 Project. One of the points that he makes is that, like many of the white people who came over to the New World, those original Africans were indentured servants. They worked for a time, and then they were on their own. You suggest, Peter, in your book, that one of these famous initial captives also may have later in life been a slave owner himself. Is that right?
That's what the records show, although we're not quite clear whether those people who were called slaves were themselves indentured servants or real slaves. It would have been a very early instance of slavery in a British colony if they were slaves. But yes, that's true. He became the at least the steward, if not the owner, of other Africans who were brought over later.
And one of the points that you make, and I think it's a tremendously important point, is not to deny that racism wasn't at the heart of the institution of slavery as it developed. But you make the point in your book, 1620, that it was actually slavery and its economic ramifications that gave rise to racism, at least as much as racism gave rise to slavery.
I think that's exactly right. That's the institution of slavery more or less pushed people into elevating the differences between races as the point at which we should begin to evaluate our differences. Background noise. You do eliminate.
Yes, there. You got the background noise. You're not being jammed, I don't think. This is not an example of Russian cyber hacking. But the idea that America is exceptional is obvious to everyone and to everyone who lives here. The real problem, as you point out in your book, is that the 1619 Project wants to make America exceptionally guilty instead of exceptionally great. Do you believe that America is exceptionally guilty of polluting the peaceful, environmentally responsible, harmonic paradise that existed here with Native Americans before all that was polluted by the English arrivals?
No, that is a absurd mythology that has evolved in the last few years. Native Americans were busy enslaving each other, engaged in incessant tribal warfare. When they could get their hands on Europeans, they enslaved them too. But slavery was an endemic institution in the Americas long before any Europeans ever arrived here, and continued to be long after Europeans had arrived here. We have numerous accounts of Americans, other Europeans, who were captured by Native tribes and served as slaves until they got liberated sometime later. Of course, many of them died under torture and other forms of brutal treatment as they were slaves. So, the Native peoples of North America were neither benevolent towards each other, nor were they especially environmentally conscious. They were peoples who exploited their landscape as ruthlessly as any capitalist ever did. They simply had less tools by which to do that. So in New England, for example, they routinely burned off forests in order to create arable land for planting their crops. Not exactly an environmentally friendly approach to managing the landscape, but it worked. As to slavery, it was a worldwide institution in 1619. Every continent except Antarctica had some version of it going on, and it was an exceptional thing that the British colonization of the North American continent did not include slavery, not for a long time. The Spanish and the Portuguese had brought African slaves to the New World more than 100 years earlier. The main slave trade was to Brazil and Mexico and to the Caribbean, but it was a late arrival on coastal North America, except for an experiment that the Spanish had going in Florida and later Georgia, where they had African slaves for a while, 100 years before the arrival of slaves in Virginia. So there's no way in which slavery in Virginia was an exceptional historical circumstance. It was just one more of the routine things that happened as the world began to get global in the 17th century. But beyond that, I think we would have to add that there was something exceptional about slavery in the English colonies, which was the rise of the abolition movement. If you want to know what's exceptional about slavery here, is that for the first time in world history that we know of, the state began to think that this was not a good institution and that we should eliminate it. It took several centuries for the abolitionist movement to achieve its objectives, but as early as the early 18th century, there were North American colonists who were thinking, this institution has to go, And it did go. It was originally present in all the colonies to some degree, but the New England colonies rapidly rid themselves of it, and we eventually, of course, fought the Civil War to eliminate it entirely. That is exceptional.
And one of the other points that comes across very clearly in taking a look at your book, which is posted on our website at michaelmedved.com, the book is called 1620, A Critical Response to the 1619 Project, is that, yes, America and what happened here broke with the past. The 1619 Project wants you to believe that we broke with the past in a malevolent and evil and cruel and exploitative and deadly way. What you're suggesting is a break with the past that's far more admirable and beneficial. Explain.
Well, I think that if we're going to look to the early years of English settlement in the New World, we get a much better picture of what happened with what happened in November of 1620 when the Mayflower anchored off the coast of Cape Cod. On board were a mixed crew of religious dissidents, the people we call pilgrims, and a bunch of people who were brought over by an English land company to settle in Virginia and who had no particular religious outlook. The pilgrims called them strangers. When they arrived out of season off the coast of New England, where they shouldn't have been, they fell against each other and quarreled. The strangers thought that they were now released from their contract with the land company and could do what they want. The pilgrims thought that this would be a recipe for disaster because they were out of food and they faced a hostile environment. So they came together and signed.
Okay, we're going to figure out what happened and how they got out of that. Also, what about erasing parts of our history that are politically inconvenient today and the idea of reparations? We'll get to all of that with Professor Peter Wood, author of 1620, A Critical Response to the 1619 Project, coming up. In this great holiday season, maybe you're wondering about what you can buy for a person that has everything. Well, how about donating on that person's behalf to a child who has nothing? Being a third world nation, Uganda was hit particularly hard with COVID-19 and lockdowns. There are literally millions of parents who are looking into a child's eyes and not being able to tell them where the next meal can come from. One of the places it can come from is a great humanitarian organization that I am proud to link with here. It is called Next Generation Ministries, and they are there to help provide food and medical needs, particularly for children and their mothers. Your gift of $10 can feed a hungry child for an entire week. $40 can feed a child for a month. $200 can feed a family of five people for a month. Click on the banner at our website for Next Generation Ministries. This is a great organization. Click on the banner at michaelmedved.com. That's michaelmedved.com. With Election Day now behind us, our economic and social problems, well, they're still here. And people are uncertain about the future, of course, with a nervous world economy and coronavirus numbers still rising. Well, wealth protection is more important than ever. I've bought gold, silver, and even platinum from my good friend and coin and bullion expert for over 40 years, Nick Rovich. Nick owns AmFed Coin and Bullion in Arizona, and he has over 25,000 long-term satisfied clients all across the United States and an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. He's earned a reputation for honesty, for expertise, and for trust among his peers and his customers. He's a court-certified expert, and AmFed is the only company I trust in that unregulated coin and bullion industry. Whether you're interested in acquiring or selling rare coins or precious metals, call AmFed Coin and Bullion at 800-221-7694 or visit AmericanFederal.com, 800-221-7694, and learn more at AmericanFederal.com.
What if people always acted the same way they do when they're driving their cars?
Good morning, Mrs. Blanchard. How may I help you?
I'd like to cash this check.
Sure.
I'll just get my pen.
Come
here.
On, lady. Get a move on.
Goodness.
Where'd you learn to bank anyway?
Ooh.
Whoa. Don't you give me that look.
It sure wouldn't be a very friendly place.
What kind of candy do you want, sweetie?
This. No, this.
Pick something already. Come on, honey. We're holding people up. How about this kind?
No.
What is the matter with you people? If you're not going to do something, I am. Get out of my way.
Every day, drivers and their families all across the country are killed on the roadways because of road rage.
Wasn't it a beautiful wedding?
Oh, yes, Mimi. Such a lovely couple.
Excuse me, is this the receiving line?
Yes, it is.
Hey, he cut in line.
I'm a friend of the bride. Do you know the
groom? Hey, pal, you cut in line.
Buzz off.
Oh, yeah?
He hit that nice man.
That'll teach you to cut in line, you jerk.
Stop this senselessness of road rage. It's time we all drive with the same courtesy we extend to people in the rest of our lives. A message from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nanocolloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Michael Medved Show with Peter Wood, the author of 1620, and in 1620, in November, and November off the coast of Cape Cod, it's not like August. It's rugged, it's cold, it's forbidding. And the pilgrims, together with the strangers who had come with them, are gathered in the cabin of the Mayflower, and Peter Wood, the author of 1620, was just talking about a truly important beginning for American history, a beginning that clearly matters much more than the fraud that has been promulgated all across the country and around the world by the so-called 1619 Project. So, Peter, what's so important about that Mayflower Compact?
Well, what the people did in the cabin of the Mayflower was basically invent self-government. They decided that to get along in the New World without having British authority over them, they would have to elect their own leaders, create their own laws. They did acknowledge the sovereignty of the King of England and the sovereignty of God, but then the rest was on their own. They created what they call a civil body politic, in which they agreed that they would treat one another as equals. That is, no difference between the religious dissenters and the secular strangers. They would all have the same rights. They decided that this document could be signed by servants as well as their masters, by the young over under age 21 and their elders. It was as democratic a document as you could find in the 17th century. And then they got on shore at Plymouth about a month later and put this thing into practice. It survived intact as their governing document for 25 years until they were overwhelmed and taken in by the later arriving Puritans from Massachusetts Bay Colony. They reached a treaty with the Wampanoag Indians, which lasted for 50 years unbroken. They showed themselves capable of coordinated self-defense against hostile Indians, and they showed themselves as committed to maintaining the principles of freedom and equality set forth in this very brief document. It's just 198 words long, but in that document we glimpse the beginning of the idea that settlers in the New World could govern themselves freely and fairly. It's a foretaste of what was later more fully realized in the Declaration of Independence. Now, that's a breathtaking document in its way, and it was recognized for what it was. The settlement of New England and eventually of much of North America followed the template of what happened at Plymouth. So it really does.
And the other crucial thing to keep in mind is, as you indicate in your book and as people did, the American Revolution was to defend that self-government, which had been achieved de facto because Britain was so far away, and to defend it against attempts to trim it or cut it away or undermine it by the Parliament and the Crown. Let me ask you very quickly, you do not, and it's very clear in looking at 1620, your book, that you do not minimize the suffering involved with slavery, the criminal nature of slavery as an institution and robbing human beings of their humanity and dignity. What do you make of the current drive? And at just today, there are incoming congressmen, Democrats, who are calling for an immediate push on reparations. Do you think that reparations for historical wrongs of the past is a wise policy for America to follow in 2021?
I think it's a terrible policy. We're not talking about injustices committed to any living people or even the direct descendants of living people within a generation or two. To roll back the clock to the slavery of people who were emancipated in 1865 is a folly from which we will never recover. It basically is a declaration that the wrongs of the past will forever haunt us, and that those reparations once paid will remain a stigma that will divide the country for many, many generations to come, perhaps permanently. I think it is a terrible idea.
This is not a form of reparations, but it is another issue in the news. In Montgomery, Alabama, which was the first capital of the Confederacy, there is a main drag which has become an important drag in a city that today is majority black. In Montgomery, that main drag is called Jefferson Davis Avenue. And right now there's a dispute between the state of Alabama and the city of Montgomery about renaming Jefferson Davis Avenue for Fred Gray, who was a groundbreaking, truly historic and heroic attorney who represented Rosa Parks and achieved a great deal during the civil rights era. He's still alive. He's 90. Do you think that that kind of renaming is always misguided, or do you think that there are cases like this one where it makes sense?
I think it's generally misguided. I think Mr. Gray probably deserves recognition while he's still alive, but renaming this particular street after him may not be the best thing. The reason why it's not the best thing is that we need these reminders of the past. We can't simply sanitize our history and take out of it all of the awkward and troubling things by pretending they didn't happen. And as we take down monuments
and
rename...
What would you say to a young child, like Mr. Gray grew up on Jeff Davis Boulevard? If somebody asked, who was Jeff Davis, why are we honoring him with the street that we live on? What would you say to a small kid?
I would say we're not necessarily honoring him. We're remembering him because he played a crucial role in our history being black history in this case. But to understand black history, you have to know who Jefferson Davis is and what kind of role he played in the suffering of African Americans in his time and later on.
But surely you can sympathize, I certainly do, with people who believe that Jefferson Davis did almost nothing that deserves honor. Can you think of anything that Jefferson Davis achieved in his political career that deserves honor?
No, I can't, and I abhor what he did. He helped divide the country and brought on a horrendous civil war, and for that I don't honor him in the least, and I do understand that monuments and street names and building names and so on are not eternal. There may come the time when we dispense with them, but I think dispensing with them wholesale as part of a general movement to erase the past is a mistake. Maybe it's time to retire his name on that particular street, but it can't be seen as an act in isolation. This is going on while we are engaged in a wholesale movement to erase every vestige of our past, which includes terrible people and terrible events, which just cannot be forgotten without a much greater sacrifice of our national memory of who we are and how we came to be what we are.
And beautifully said, and I agree with you fully, because what people come up with all the time is the slippery slope argument is, okay, you get rid of Jefferson Davis, well then it's just a hop, skip, and a jump to getting rid of Abraham Lincoln. Except it's not, because one of the things that I appreciate about 1620 is you make value judgments. Not everything that happened in America has been beautiful or beneficial or admirable, but most of it has. That is an undeniable fact of the blessing we receive as Americans and American citizens. Peter Wood is the president of the National Association of Scholars. He is a former professor of anthropology and a college provost. In 2019, an auspicious year, he received the Jean Kirkpatrick Prize for contributions to academic freedom. His book, 1620, certainly makes a contribution to everyone's understanding of academic freedom and what the American heritage truly amounts to. We're going to be talking about this a little bit further. There's a new book about Frederick Douglass and his defense of the U.S. Constitution. Defense of the Constitution against what? Against abolitionists who believe that the Constitution was a pact with the devil because it did not eliminate slavery. So what did the great former slave and leading black abolitionist say about that? We will get to that. Also, the very latest in the Georgia runoff, a new participant on behalf of the Republicans, and Dr. Fauci under fire, and much more coming up in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you could donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-785-9618. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It will be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car, and as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now, 1-800-785-9618. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-785-9618. That's 1-800-785-9618.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe Hand Sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American-made with American ingredients, employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus. That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout.
right now. Click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1 liter bottle of high quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus. A 30 count bottle of immune booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours free. 2020safe.net.